gone. Oh, honey, though our friendship ceases from now on. And listen, if you can't say anything real nice, it's better not to talk at all, is my advice. We're parting, you go your way, I'll go mine, is best that we do. Here's a kiss, I hope that this brings lots of luck to you. Oh, makes no difference how I carry on. Remember, please don't talk about me when I'm gone. Parting, you go your way, I go mine, it's best that we do. Here's a kiss, I hope that this brings lots of luck to you. Makes no difference how I carry on. Remember, please don't talk about me. Please don't talk about me. Please don't talk about me when I'm gone.
Yeah, that's what I tell both the reactionaries on the right and the left. I tell them, please don't talk about me. I don't give a shit. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker. Yeah, White Aryan Resistance Radio Network, coming to you from the deep underground bunker here in north central Indiana, with a post office box of 401, Warsaw, not Poland, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And this is April the 22nd, 2015. Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. Reminds me of when I used to talk to him from the prison for years. And we discussed what he was going to call, what he was going to do, and writing his books and stuff, and he asked my advice. I think he came up with a suggestion of Odin something. I said, Odin doesn't have a powerful enough ring to it. He said, well, what do you think? I said, Wotan. That has a powerful ring to it. He said, you know, let me think about that. He got back to me and he used Wotan. They refer to Dave Lane with his Wotanism now. So I had a little hand in that situation. So every Wednesday we give tribute to David Lane, one of the Fighting Order members, who was murdered in Terre Haute, Indiana, prison, U.S. prison, by the Federales. Whether they did it directly or the fact that he had a bad heart, put him in chains and flew him across the United States and put him in a dungeon. And he was already very sick. So it was murder as far as I'm concerned. And there was no need, whatsoever to transfer him to the most radical prison, almost the most radical prison in the world, was Terre Haute Prison, because that's where they're putting all the terrorists and so forth. And so people say, why do you hate? And I say, the haters cause me to hate. The haters that murder David Lane caused me to hate. And the prison people and the DAs and the attorney generals that put racial separatists away for life sentences for relatively small crimes compared to the mass murder by Negroes and others around the country. So they say, why do you hate? Well, it's simple. It's very simple. I get letters from prisoners all the time of the maltreatment they get into prison. Good white guys, good white POWs, good white separatists. And even on a simple magazine or a book you send them that has nothing to do with advocating terrorism, they'll reject it, won't let them have the book, and they have to put grievances in. They torture our people. Every day in these prisons, they're torturing our people. Now, that's something I wish these reactionary people on the right, and even in the white racial right, would talk about. And, you know, one thing I give credit to the Negroes. Their people go to jail. They still treat them civilly. Their families come to see them on a regular basis. They write them. They give tribute to them. They give speeches about them, how great they were in the churches and everything else. And that's one thing that I got to hand it to the blacks about. The whites, especially on the conservative right-wing side of the racial struggle, are absolutely useless and, to be perfectly honest, deserve hatred for not supporting not only the order members, but white POWs that went to prison because of their racial activity across the country. So next time you ask, or somebody asks, why is that Metzger so hateful? Actually, I'm not much of a hater until somebody makes me hate or does things that make me hate. I'm a pretty happy-go-lucky guy. Ask anybody around this town. I joke around with people. I get along with people. People decent to me, I treat them decently. But when you do terrible, awful, torturous things to people I know, and even some of the people I don't know, then you incur the wrath of hatred from Tom Metzger. And that is normal. That should be normal. I was sort of amused. I got a piece of information from one of our lone wolves who's in contact with a person who is actually somewhat of a leader and has been a leader in the struggle. And I support that leader who's in prison, that turned around when asked about me, said that Tom Metzger is too negative. Too negative. Oh, man. With the shit that's going on towards white people and especially towards our people, and they call me negative, I probably should be a hell of a lot more negative. In fact, the person who's in the prison did something so stupid that got himself in there that I would call that negative, doing stupid things and getting decades in prison for it is very stupid. If you do something intelligent and there's no escape and you get caught or whatever and sent to prison, that's a different thing. But a person who does stupid things and then turns around and says, that Metzger, he's negative. Whoa, man, that's going a little bit too far. In fact, that person in question, and I'm not going to tell you his name, has been receiving money from me almost ever since he's gone to prison. And that money comes from you, because when you contribute to me, I go out and buy money orders and send it to these prisoners, the ones that I really think need support, and especially the order members. That's not negative, I don't think. If that's negative, I don't know what positive is. But I know what they think. They want me to put on the rose-colored glasses and say, well, if you go to these rallies and listen to all these hacked old speeches that have been given thousands of times before, If you follow some of these so-called leaders that are busy collecting money, but they're not doing much else, if you do all these things that the bowel movement, as I call it, does, then I guess I'm a positive guy. But if I point out the fallacies of the whole fucking basis of most of the right-wing positions, racial right, then I'm a bad guy. But I'm going to keep on doing what I do, and that's it. And somebody asked me something about something that I didn't want to really talk about lately. And I said, well, I think I'll tell that on my deathbed, but I'll only do it with a quart of scotch sitting there where I can have a drink. On my deathbed, maybe I'll tell all. FBI, eat your heart out. Now, don't forget to go up there to our 641-715-3800 and put in this code, 56890, and then press pound. And you can hear our message, and I'm going to try to do it every day. And I was thinking of putting the phone number back on that we did have that you didn't have to put in the code. But I'm not going to do it until I get about at least 25 or 30 calls a day. Right now we're only getting a handful of calls. So I'm not going to go to all that trouble if people are not going to call and leave messages and listen to my message. So if you want an expanded setup, and even I got some video stuff planned for you, you're going to have to support it. Now, I'm going to get some stamps in here so that you can go around, stamp all your envelopes and so forth with an unequal sign. And I want everybody to buy one, and every time you get a postage paid envelope come in from all these advertisers, or you go to the post office and you dig them out of the trash can, or you go to your doctor's office and tear these cards out of magazines laying around and then stamp them and send them off, how much trouble can that be? That's about the minimum anybody can do, but it's important. If the people who are involved in the so-called racial struggle today would all concentrate on the one symbol, the non-equal sign. Now, you don't even have to buy stickers. You don't have to buy a stamp. All you need is a felt pen that it takes less than a half a second to draw a non-equal sign anywhere you're at, whether it's in a bathroom stall or what. We need to do that. We need to center around a symbol that says it all very simply. And it can't be the old stuff. It can't be the KKK. It can't be the swastika. It can't be all that stuff, even though that in its day maybe that was fine. But no, the non-equal sign says it all. And we got to push it, promote it, put it up everywhere we go. I put them out every day, all over the place. So anyhow, but I will get some stamps and make them available for you, pre-ink stamps. And then you can just have a pile of envelopes in front of you and stamp them out in a couple of seconds. Every time an ad comes into my house or my office, we take out the postage paid envelope and stamp a non-equal sign on it and send it right back out. Easy as that. Simple. Simple. It's a simple thing. Everybody's looking for the golden goose, the one thing that they could do that would change the world. That's not the way it works. It starts by gradual doing things. Just simple things. Little things. And then it'll tend to grow and grow and grow and can grow into a giant, formidable, psychological army. Do it. If you want to talk about Jewish criminality and how many Jews and the percentage of Jews that are involved in criminality, well, go to this Greed show. It's called Greed. You can get it on, the cable. You can get it on regular dish TV or DirecTV. And a whole lot of the stories, I mean, probably over 50% of this high-class fraud is committed by Jews, and they tell you all about it. So those that are saying it's hidden, we don't know where it's at, or no Jews are doing that. Bullshit, they tell you almost every show on there of millions and millions and even billions of bucks being stolen and defrauded people. It's on that show called Greed, and it's quite interesting, quite interesting. Even the rabbis are into it, of course. They try to cover themselves as being religious. They're like the black preachers. The blacks learned it from the Jews. Everybody in the Orthodox Jewish community is a rabbi. And everybody now in any day, everybody in the black community is a black preacher, a reverend. And they put these fuckers on TV and radio as being experts. Even Dr. so-called Martin Luther Kuhn. They go to some two-bit seminary or not at all and just put a label on, I'm a minister. And they put them on television, and their voice and their opinion is rated three times your opinion because they got that in front of their name. The right wing does that too. The right wing used to really do it a lot. I know Dr. James K. Warner. What a speckled career he had. He's still around, I guess. But he rode off to Popular Mechanics in the back and sent in an ad, and for a couple of bucks, or maybe five or 20, he became a doctor. So he's Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. James K. Warner. And David Duke, the same way. He took some Mickey Mouse so-called course over there in Eastern Europe, and now he's a Dr. David Duke. And people have a tendency to fall for that stuff. Doesn't make him any smarter than anybody else. Doesn't make anybody any smarter. It's like PhD piled higher and deeper. To be perfectly honest, I can get a much more logical opinion off the local gasoline attendant who pumps gas or used to pump gas, or a bartender. I can get more logic out of those people than I can these people that have doctor on their name. And you've got people like Dr. Henry Kissinger. Well, these guys, they'll go to all these universities, but you got to understand that most of the time they feed bullshit into them, and they pass the course. They put that doctor on their name, and everybody's supposed to bow down and kiss their ass. Well, here's one boy that don't kiss anybody's ass unless they prove they're smart and intelligent. You know? Put a label on somebody's name, doctor, doesn't mean shit to me. Being raised on the farm here in Indiana, I used to know a lot of old people. I used to love to sit down and talk to old people and learn things. Most kids were out doing something else. But I'd sit for hours and sit on a swing of a porch with a farmer out here and his wife and talk to them. And believe me, I got more education out of them than I ever did in school. And their opinions tend to be very blunt and short and very to the point. Much more intelligent than all these educated, piled higher and deeper people. But the educational establishment have trained the young people, don't listen to old people. They don't know nothing. They don't know nothing. They're old people. They don't know crap. My stepfather quit school in the eighth grade, and he was sharp as hell. He knew what was going on about many things. He didn't know about everything because he didn't look into it. I've known a lot of people, and look at some of the great millionaires in this country that dropped out of school in grade school. Look at Learjet. I don't think he even made it through high school. And when you hear these politicians up there in Washington talking, I don't know about you, but they sound stupid. They sound absolutely stupid. But they put it in flowery language and try to speak in university style, and everybody says, oh my God, those guys people, they're smart. They're going to take care of the country. They can't even take care of their own budget in their own house. One of them that drives me up the wall is this Mike Huckabee, Republican bastard, who this guy, his claim to fame was he became a preacher and he had a little flock of people he preached to him and he built on that to become the governor of the goddamn state. And now he's running for president and he's, people say, oh my God, Mike Huckabee, what a brain, what a brain. How stupid can we be? Well, I'm not stupid. You might be, but I'm not. His opinion isn't worth the powder to blow it up with. My dad used to say, you don't have enough brains to pound sand in a rat hole. Well, George Carlin had more brains in his little finger than all those guys do in their whole body. Even though I didn't always agree with George Carlin, I agree with much of it. I agree with most of what he said, because he zeroed in on it. 80%, 85% of it all is bullshit. And on that greed show, you'll find the Jews in the Justice Department, full of Jews, of course, Jews in the SEC, and then it's all these Jews that are involved in the legal end of it, prosecutors, chasing other Jews. So you got half of the stories now are Jew legal people chasing Jew crooks. As far as I'm concerned, they're all crooks. I watched a story about the Mustang Ranch yesterday on greed. I like that guy. He was able to outfox the IRS and get out of the country with about, I don't know, nobody knows for sure, at least $10 million. The IRS pestered him and pestered him, and he got out of the country, and he's down in Brazil living the good life. So he said, fuck the Internal Revenue Service, and he beat him. I cheer guys like that. I think they're great, because most of the time the prosecution is more guilty than the person they're after. Plus, think about all these billionaires that are stacking their money offshore that make the fellow that ran the Mustang Ranch look like a Boy Scout. They don't go after the really big boys, the 1%, 2%. They want to go after lower-level people. So when they fail to get them, I love it. That guy must have been a pretty well-liked guy that owned the Mustang Ranch, because none of the people associated with him would testify against him. None of them, even though some of them went to jail for 3 or 4 years. So that does prove that some white people stick together. And these were all white people in the entourage at the Mustang Ranch. Probably he stepped on some toes of the Vegas people. But I see now that they're reinstituting that Mustang Ranch and they moved it closer into Vegas and they're revamping the whole deal. Not that I would go to a place like that, because that's just not the way I operate. I could never understand having sex with a prostitute, because when I have sex with a woman, it's got to be a woman I really have feelings for, not like a mechanical assembly line. I don't know whether I could even get a Woody with a paid prostitute. By the way, all you young bucks out there that know I'm 77 years old, oh, you couldn't get a Woody. Bring your girlfriend over and I'll show you.
Killing of by cops and of blacks seems to be picking up for some reason. Things are getting hotter. It's going to get real hot this summer. Okay, Pat from Detroit.
Message deleted. Next message.
Wings.
Sure. Yeah, sir. My name is George. I just called to let you know that I've been listening to your stuff here, and I don't consider myself per se a racist, but you do make sense. And I'd like, if possible, to possibly discuss this further. If we could maybe talk one-on-one, that'd be...
I was a little vague on that. Yeah, man, this is like back in, I think it was 94, seeing you on the show. Yeah, you woke me up on a lot of shit. I was like 19, dude. I'm like 40 years old now. So out of all the fucking people I've listened to over the years, man, you made the most sense. And honestly, dude, you gave me good advice that it actually paid off, man. I used to be in and out of jail all the fucking time because I was walking around fucking head shaved, acting like an asshole, showing everybody what I was doing, you know, spotlighting myself and shit. Yeah, man. When, you know, your voice really kept me out of trouble so I could do my thing without getting some shit. So, and I ain't been in no shit since, well, you know, no jail time since like 2004 when I got out. So, yeah, man, you fucking, you keep well, bud. You're definitely, a lot of people listen to you, man. There's a lot of us out here. They try to act like there ain't very many of us. Bullshit. A lot of us. If we can get all these fuckers to stop being cowards, there'd be a lot more. All right, man. Later. Wipe.
You know, I was watching, and I don't know whether I told you this before or not. I was watching a documentary attacking Michael Moore, the documentarian, who's come out with some pretty good stuff, as far as I'm concerned. Well, anyhow, in this documentary, all of a sudden I saw something familiar. It was Bob Miles, Reverend Bob Miles' farm up in Michigan, and one of their yearly gatherings. And I was there. And this was his first assignment. Michael Moore was working for this other outfit, and he came out there to do an interview on the dreaded Nazis and all that kind of stuff. Well, when I tuned in, he was interviewing this gal from Detroit. There was a group of NS people that used to come out from Detroit to his meetings. They would dress up in the full NS uniform stuff, the black uniforms, all that kind of stuff, real Hollywood stuff. But then I realized I was right there. I never talked to Michael Moore, but I must have been about 10 feet from him at the very beginning. I was quite surprised at that. It's interesting. Deja vu. Do you realize they've got 9 warships, including a carrier, sitting off the coast of Yemen to this country that's 99% Negro? Don't have a pot to piss in. They even got the Saudi Arabians who were responsible. Main responsibility was the 9/11 over there bombing the shit out of them, trying to support a different group, the Houthis. The Houthis, which don't make a damn bit of difference to us. Do you realize how much it costs to move 9 warships and a carrier into position, and the arming of those ships and all the troops, all the Navy personnel and everything? Do you realize how much that cost the average taxpayer? And then you wonder why the bridges are falling apart. The roads are falling to pieces. The whole infrastructure of the United States is collapsing because we're farting around like today with 9 warships, including a carrier, watching over the Negroes in Africa. And I don't hear hardly anybody bitching about it because they cover it up with humanitarian. We're there for humanitarian reasons. Well, really, what's going on, and in fact, this is everything big that's gone to shit in this world is now emanating from Washington and the CIA and so forth. They keep talking about how bad Iran is, and they go back, or they say Iran hates the United States, and the United States hates Iran. Well, the Iranians have every right to hate the United States because, remember, back in the 50s, we, through the CIA, overthrew their democratically elected leader, the president of Iran. We caused him to be overthrown. So why would not the Iranians hate our fucking ass? And then they got mad and they kidnapped all those people and kept them for 2 or 3 years over there. And then the other story today is that all these migrants... that are getting on boats and everything. Some of them holding up to 1,000 people fleeing out of Africa. And you know how we're against all these people infiltrating the United States and invading Europe and so forth. But it's our white leaders and a mulatto that cause it. We're spending billions over there stirring the shit up and throwing out of the regime change, which destabilizes the country. The governments collapse. Everybody's shooting at everybody. And if you were one of those people over there, what the hell would you try to do? You'd try to get on a raft or an old 50-gallon drum or anything you could to get out of there. And then they come to the United States and Europe, and we bitch about it. And that's how it's happening. United States Empire, the United States Empire, is stirring up almost all the shit in the world now. Illegally. Against everything. And those people fleeing, they don't know which way to go. Everybody's shooting at everybody. So let me get my ass out of here, any place. So I'll try to get to Europe. I'll try to get to the United States. I'll try to get someplace to get out of here. And it's all coming right out of New York, Wall Street, the corporatist, and the Pentagon. So the next time you think about being pissed off about all these migrants coming onto the shores of the United States and Europe, if you want to solve that, you got to go to the Pentagon and Wall Street in Washington, because that's where it's all coming from. That's where it's all coming from. So we get what we pay for. We get what we deserve. The white race is getting what it deserves. I don't think you deserve it. I don't think I deserve it. But collectively, the white race deserves it. And we're getting it. But they're still too stupid to figure it out. They still support spending billions of dollars in regime change to get who they want into office so they can get the money for the corporations any way possible. We don't give a shit. Destroy all the governments. Destroy the nation. That's what it's all about. You know, the news is traveling so fast lately. It's so fast that you got to be on it all the time. So now when I'm out to town or to go to the grocery store or whatever, I've got a tape recorder, not a tape recorder, but a recorder on the dash of my car that I can press a button and get the news broadcast and keep sort of up to situation. Now let's play this and see what you think.
That's going down very well here in Iran, again, in this diplomatically very, very decisive time, Carol.
All right, Frederick Plagan reporting from inside Iran this morning. Thanks so much. Let's talk more about this with CNN Global Affairs analyst and former U.S. Delta Force commander, Lieutenant Colonel James Reese. Welcome.
Hi, Carol. Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, let's tackle, first of all, with that military official from Iran said today. He said he considers the United States to be a threat to Iran. Just talk? Should we be concerned?
Well, Carol, I think, you know, both sides have been a threat to both sides for years. Let's call a spade here. Iran has been an enemy of the United States, and we have been an enemy of Iran for years, ever since the overthrow and the capture of the Americans at the U.S. Embassy.
Now, you notice how he says ever since the capture of the American citizens and holding them over there in Iran? No. Ever since we, through the CIA, overthrew the democratically elected president of Iran by the name of Mossadegh, and we installed the dictator Shah of Iran, totally installed by the CIA. And then you wonder why the Iranians hate the United States? What if the situation was reversed? But the United States system, the empire people, they never think of that, or they don't talk about that. Nothing's ever reversed. The shoe's never on the other foot. That's empire. That's world dictatorship. Now, in France today, they caught themselves what they believe is a terrorist who was allegedly going to shoot up a couple of churches in Paris. They found a Kalashnikov rifle in his car. They found pistols. They found all kinds of information in his car, intimating that he also had shot a woman in the process and killed her. But now think about this. Think about the hundreds of thousands of Middle Easterners, Muslims and Arabs and everybody else, that were killing all the time. They were killing every day. Droning and bombing and just the people who died in Iraq. Now you might say, well, you're a white racist. Why would you worry about it? I worry about anything that affects the white race. And when these bastards in the Pentagon involve themselves in killing hundreds of thousands of people in the Middle East who are going to turn out hating our ass, and every one of their kids are going to want Americans to die, white Americans, that concerns me. That concerns me. Plus all the so-called migrant flowing out of these countries trying to escape. We don't have any real powerful enemies outside the United States. They're all inside the United States, and they're in power. Who knows, that kid that was involved in that terrorist act, probably his whole family been wiped out. These people, their whole families get wiped out, and then they arm themselves and go out, and maybe they kill one or two people, or maybe they want to kill 1,000 people, but they're not able to do it. But wouldn't you? Wouldn't you hold a grudge forever if somebody wiped out your family? If you were having a wedding party and they droned and killed everybody in the wedding party? Or if you had kids playing out on the playground and these fuckers come in and blow them to pieces? Wouldn't you want to kill somebody? If you didn't, you wouldn't be much of a person. Even with the cops in this country making home invasions all the time. Not just blacks. They do it all the time. They get the wrong houses, the pretense it's a big drug deal. And here again, all this drug nonsense. Let them have their drugs. I don't care if people want drugs. Why do I give a shit whether people have drugs? I only care if they bother me or my family. And as far as pot is concerned, hell, I wish all the blacks did smoke pot, because they'd be much more docile and less dangerous. You take notice they never go after the booze and make it illegal, because there's nothing makes people more angry and dangerous than booze. I mean, there's more people killed every day in this country because of alcohol consumption than drugs. Well, let's listen to a little bit here from Jim Hightower, man. The populist man. And he's even white.
A longtime Washington PR flack for tobacco giants, labor exploiters, frackers, and other corporate profiteers celebrates himself as Dr. Evil, the scourge of all progressive groups. But Rick Berman is not a doctor, not evil, and not a scourge. While he is a wholly unprincipled little man, he's just a self-serving huckster who grubs for corporate dollars by offering to do their dirty PR work. Berman's modus operandi is not exactly sophisticated. Taking money from the likes of Philip Morris, Monsanto, and Tyson Foods, he sets up tax-exempt front groups with nondescript names like Center for Consumer Freedom, Employment Policies Institute, and Environmental Policy Alliance, posing them as independent research outfits. Each one is an empty shell, run by his small staff out of his Washington, D.C. office. Using the names of the front groups, Berman and company buy full-page newspaper ads and write opinion pieces that amount to raw hatchet attacks on whatever progressive groups or public policies the corporate funders want to kill. His mad dog style is hardly worrisome to those targeted, for rather than drawing converts to the corporate funders' cause, It merely rallies the usual anti-labor, anti-enviro, anti-fill-in-the-blank crowd. But it still appeals to brand-name corporate clients, for Berman promises to spew their message into the media without having any of the nastiness stick to them. We run all this stuff through nonprofit organizations that are insulated from having to disclose donors, he assured energy executives last year. There is total anonymity, he bragged. People don't know who supports us. This is Jim Hightower saying, but big holes in his curtain of anonymity are now revealing some of the corporations hiding behind it. To take a peek, go to www.bermanexposed.org.
Now, let's see here. Berman. Is he or ain't he? I'll bet he is. Well, here's some jolly news for you, boys and girls. Your great Justice Department. The law, we must live by the law. Over the course of more than two decades prior to 2000, most of the examiners in an FBI forensic unit gave flawed testimony in most of the trials in which they offered evidence against criminal defendants. How about that? Well, let's look farther into that. In 268 trials reviewed so far, 26 of the 28 examiners with the FBI Laboratory's Microscopic Hair Comparison Unit overstated evidence that favored the prosecution more than 95% of the time, according to the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers and the Innocence Project. Now the FBI and Justice Departments have formally admitted to this grave miscarriage of justice. Oh, wow. What about the guys who are sitting in prison? What about the guys that were executed based on this evidence? The flawed testimony had devastating impacts on many of the defendants. At least 32 were sentenced to death. 14 have been executed or died in prison. Prosecutors and the affected defendants have been notified in case there are grounds for appeals. Grounds for appeal should be grounds for extermination of the people who did this to them. I mean, oh, well, we'll give them a little money. That'll be all. That'll make them happy. Yeah. The FBI has identified roughly 2,500 cases for review in which a hair match was made by the FBI lab. You know, if you know anybody in prison that don't know this, that were convicted on the basis of hair analysis, get in touch with them, let them know. In fact, hair analysis and the definitive matches are a lot more subjective than was claimed. The Justice Department and the FBI said in a statement that they are, quote, committed to ensuring that affected defendants are notified of past errors and that justice is done in every instance. The department and the famous but incompetent are committed to ensuring the accuracy of future hair analysis testimony. Well, that don't help the guys, 32 guys that were executed, as well as the application of all disciplines of forensic science, unquote. You see, you watch these television shows, system-generated television shows, about how wonderful forensics is and how wonderful the FBI is. And boy, you know, CSI Miami, CSI New York, all that bullshit. After federal authorities launched a federal investigation in 2012, FBI experts were found to have used incomplete or misleading statistics during testimonies in which they testified that hairs found at criminal scenes were near certain matches to the defendants. Hundreds of potentially innocent people may have been wrongfully convicted as a result of these testimonies from cases that date clear back into the 70s. Issues with misleading hair analysis isn't new, but the scale of the new omissions is. In 2002, the FBI admitted that its experts reported false hair matches more than 11% of the time. In Washington, D.C., 3 of 7 defendants whose trials included flawed testimony have been exonerated, since 2009. Only three other courts have exonerated two other men. All of the exonerated had served 20 to 30 years in prison on rape and murder convictions. As the Post reported, correcting the problem may be harder than admitting it, since it relies on local judges and prosecutors and defense lawyers' willingness and cooperation. University of Virginia law professor Brandon L. Garrett said the results reveal a mass disaster. Well, I say a mass crime inside the criminal justice system, one that has been unable to self-correct because the courts rely on outdated precedents, admitting scientifically invalid testimony at trial and under the legal doctrine of finality, make it difficult for convicts to challenge old evidence. You know, it's almost impossible to win an appeal. Even in my civil case, we appealed it to the federal courts, even to the United States Supreme Court. And that's something, how many of these right-wing potentate leaders have told you that Tom Metzger appealed his case in Portland, Oregon, all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, but they wouldn't hear it? Well, it's not altogether because of any bias on their part, but it does have to do with they have far too many cases to go over to handle all of them. But how many white racist leaders and members have you known that have appealed a case all the way to the Supreme Court? Now, you'd think that would be interesting for these right-wing reactionaries to talk about. Hey, that Metzger, man, he fought these all the way in Portland, and he appealed his case all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, does that count for anything, or does it? Well, anyhow, I'll go on with this. Quote, the tools don't exist to handle systematic errors in our criminal justice system. Wait a minute. Let's hear that again. The tools don't exist to handle systematic errors in our criminal justice system, Garrett said. Well, that's a crime in itself. Everybody participating in that kind of activity is a criminal, even worse than the people they put in prison. Quote, the FBI deserves every recognition for doing something really remarkable here. Oh, yeah? They should be dragging them away and putting them in jail themselves. The problem is there may be few judges, prosecutors, or defense lawyers who are able or willing to do anything about it. I'm going, quote, don't blame it on all those people. Blame it on the FBI itself. Federal authorities are offering new DNA testing in cases with errors. Well, there's been problems with DNA testing, too. They said Craig Cobb was a nigger. That was so totally ridiculous. And you know, a lot of the right-wing reactionaries fell for it. Oh, I don't want anything to do with Craig Cobb because they said he's a nigger through DNA. He has connections to the African sub-Saharan. There's so much bullshit going on in this DNA testing. That just shows you the fallacy of the right. A whole lot of the right wing came down on Craig Cobb because those idiots said that he had a nigger background. Well, even if he did have a Negro background in 500,000 years, that's bullshit, you know. Anyhow, federal authorities are offering new DNA testing in cases with errors. Well, they already told you over 2,000 had errors if sought by a judge or prosecutor, and agreeing to drop procedural objections to appeals in federal cases. You just don't know how many people are screwed because their appeals never go through, or they don't listen to their complaint. You know, they usually just stamp them, reject, reject. They got a federal judge up there, the appeals court, bam, bam, bam. We don't make mistakes, bam, bam. We never do. Federal authorities are offering new DNA testing in cases with errors, if sought by a judge. Well, I read that. However, biological evidence in the cases often is lost or unavailable. You know, anything that helps the defense. Oh, let's go over to the evidence room and see if it's there. My God, it's not there. Well, how could that happen? Well, most of it's due to stupidity, and a lot of it's due to complicity. Among states, only California and Texas specifically allow appeals when experts recant or scientific advances undermine forensic evidence at trial. Only two states allow appeals when the experts recant or scientific evidence advances undermine forensic evidence at trial. Who's the criminal here? Who is really the criminals? So far, the FBI has almost finished reviewing 350 trial testimonies and 900 lab reports, and about 1,200 cases still need to be reviewed. The Bureau hasn't been able to review 700 cases because the prosecutors or police didn't even respond to information requests. What are they going to say about this on Fox News, those bunch of whores over at Fox News? Oh, well, that's all right. They're mostly guilty, so we did our best. The Federal Bureau of Incompetence, as always, has done its best. Yeah, right. Oh, I just can't believe this. This cannot be believed. God's chosen people being in trouble. A jury on Tuesday convicted Rabbi Mendel Epstein and two of his three co-defendants in a federal kidnapping conspiracy case that charged them with torturing husbands to force them to agree to religious divorces. At the same time, the jurors acquitted Epstein's son, David, Ari Epstein. Incidentally, that was Irv Rubin's son. His name is Ari. Mendel Epstein, a prominent rabbi who specializes in divorce proceedings, was on trial along with his son and two other rabbis, Benjamin Stimler and Jay Goldstein, on conspiracy and kidnapping charges that grew out of a federal undercover sting. I'm amazed that the Justice Department would do that to the poor Jews. After three full days of deliberations, jurors rejected all kidnapping charges against the men. Huh! I'll bet you they were all Christians. I'll bet the jury wasn't all Jews. I'll bet the jury was all Christians, or mostly Christians. They'll let those Jews off every time. After three, the father of nine, grandfather of 45, the great-grandfather of five, Epstein, 69, was found guilty of conspiracy to commit kidnapping, but not guilty of an attempted kidnapping charge related to an undercover sting. In that sting, FBI agents secretly recorded conversations in which Epstein boastfully claimed that his team kidnappers and beats stubborn husbands until they agree to give their wives religious divorces known as gets. Now, you can imagine if one of our friends, the white separatists, did something like this. Say, Pastor Butler in his day had done that, or Pastor Miles had done something like that in his day. Can you imagine what would have happened? Guilty on all charges. Goldstein, 60, who was described as a scribe for divorce decrees, and of course this all goes back to religious insanity, Christ insanity, Hebrew insanity, Muslim insanity. Anyhow, was convicted of conspiracy to commit kidnapping and the attempted kidnapping. He was acquitted on one kidnapping charge. Well, anyhow, it goes on and on. You know, this is in Trenton, New Jersey. New Jersey must be totally, absolutely overflowing with Jews. There's hundreds, thousands of stories coming out about Jews in New Jersey. And I know what happened. They so totally took over in New York and so totally screwed up the whole system in New York that they had to escape to have someplace else to live that was close to New York. So they went down to New Jersey, and now they totally, totally control New Jersey. And I'll bet you that governor that wants to be president would never have gotten any place if he hadn't kissed their ass totally. Well, I guess the Jews have some competition with the Muslims. A federal judge on Tuesday ordered New York's Metropolitan Transportation Authority to display on its buses a controversial ad that refers to Muslim killing Jews. rejecting the argument that an ad could incite terrorism of imminent violence. U.S. District Judge John Keltel in Manhattan said the ad from the American Freedom Defense Initiative, which had previously run in Chicago and San Francisco, was protected speech under the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Let me see here. The ad portrays a menacing man wearing a scarf around his head and face, includes a quotation, "Killing Jews is worship that draws us closer to Allah," unquote, attributed to Hamas MTV, and then states, "That's his jihad. What's yours?" Keltel said he was sensitive to the security concerns, but noted that the MTA and Chairman Thomas Pendergast underestimate the tolerant quality of New Yorkers and the overestimate of the potential impact of these fleeting advertisements. It strains credulity to believe that New Yorkers would be incited to violence by ads that did not incite residents of Chicago and San Francisco. Oh, boy. You know, I just stopped to think. If you're ever accused of being homophobic, which is one of their big deals now with their LGBTQYXT shit, just say, well, you're heterophobic. Start spreading that word around. Are you heterophobic? You know, people always leave the other side, or if there is another side, have it their way. You know, you're homophobic. I don't think I'm homophobic. I don't. Just because I'm not supporting homosexuality as my personal thing, I'm not trying to kill them or anything like that. I think it's not a good lifestyle, especially among male homosexuals, to stick their penis into the shitty assholes of other people, and sometimes even their tongue. Isn't that a public health issue? Tell me, isn't that public health? Why don't these anti-homosexual preachers start describing it? Maybe even get pictures of it that you evidently can get in pornography films and so forth, and show them what they're doing. And that would, I think, change a lot of people's views. It would probably make them very homophobic. Well, that's it. I got to get out of here before I have a mental breakdown. A lot of people think I already have. There's all the news that can be classed as bullshit.
Let me tell you about Ahab, the Arab, the sheik of the burning sands. He had emeralds and rubies just a-dripping off of him, and a ring on every finger of his hand. He wore a big old turban wrapped around his head and a scimitar by his side. And every evening about midnight, he'd jump on his camel named Clyde and ride silently through the night to the Sultan's tent, where he would secretly meet up with Fatima of the Seven Veils, the swingin'est number one dancer in the Sultan's whole harem. 'Cause like him and her had a thing going, you know, and they've been carrying on for some time now behind the Sultan's back. And you could hear him talk to his camel as he rode out across the dunes. His voice would cut through the still night desert air, and he'd say, oh, yeah, 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 oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Which is Aramaic for whoa, babies. And Clyde say, well, he brought his camel to a screeching halt in the rear of Fatima's tent. Jumped off Clyde, snuck around the corner and into the tent he went. There he saw Fatima laying on a zebra skin rug, with rings on her fingers and bells on her toes and a bone in her nose, ho, ho. There she was, friends and neighbors laying there in all her radiant beauty, eating on a raisin and a grape and an apricot and a pomegranate, a bowl of chitterlings, two bananas, three Hershey bars, and sipping on an ROC Coke, listening to her transistor, watching the Grand Ole Opry, and reading Mad Magazine while she sung, "Does your chewing gum lose its flavor?" And Ahab walk up to her and he say, oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Which is Aramaic for let's twist again like we did last summer, baby. And she say, crazy, baby. All of a sudden, the sultan walked in. Ahab knew that this was the end. Him and Fatima was caught by surprise, and the sultan had fire flashing out of his eyes. Well, the sultan charged at Ahab, intending to make a dent in his head. But he fled with Fatima, and out of the tent they went. They jumped on Clyde and started to ride, cutting out across the sand, with the sultan's whole army in hot pursuit. On and on they ran. Well, to make the long story short, they got away, cause there weren't no animal alive what could keep up with Clyde once he got started, cause he would have swift his feet on the old desert babies. And they made it across the border where Ahab hopped all his rubies and emeralds, and they bought him a swanging little split level pad and lived happy ever after. Yeah, and that's the story about Ahab, the Arab, the Sheikh of the Burning Sands. Ahab, the Arab.
Now, there is a perfect example of Muslim phobia, sung and written by niggers. So, niggers are responsible for Muslim phobia.